From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. And so, Iraqis have voted. The ballot counting has begun. Today, Iraq's interim prime minister, Iyad Alawi, pronounced the election a major victory over terrorism. At least 45 people were killed in Election Day violence Sunday. Nonetheless, a jubilant Alawi told Iraqis earlier today, "As we worked together yesterday to finish dictatorship, let us work together toward a bright future. Sunnis and Shiites, Muslims and Christians, Arabs, Kurds and Turkmen. The whole world," he said, "is watching us." Tonight on Point, we're also listening to Iraq. Iraqi citizens tell us what they're thinking the day after elections. We begin in Baghdad, where officials say the election's final results may be known in a week to 10 days. They also say it will take about a week to get an accurate turnout figure for the balloting. There are already many reports of Iraqis thrilled with the simple act of voting. Anthony Shadid is Islamic Affairs correspondent for The Washington Post. He joins me from Baghdad. Anthony, thanks for being with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
Anthony, we've all seen the pictures and heard the ululating of Iraqis, seen the long lines at some polling stations. What's the takeaway? What's your big impression of Election Day in Iraq?
Well, I think what struck a lot of people in Baghdad, at least, was the way the election unfolded. In the morning, you saw people hold back. There weren't long of lines at a lot of polling stations. But as the morning went on and as attacks proved to be less ferocious than a lot of people had feared, a dynamic seemed to be unleashed, and that was people looking into the streets, seeing they were often festive, often jubilant, and they almost seemed to follow a lead, the lead of the people in the streets. Lines grew longer, more people came out, and then even in Sunni Arab neighborhoods where election officials themselves didn't expect much of a turnout, you saw lines forming even there. One neighborhood I visited in a neighborhood called Tunis, by mid-afternoon, the election official predicted that maybe two-thirds of residents in that area had come out. He expected a fraction of that.
You've written, Anthony Shadid, that there was a real note of celebration in the air. It's hard to miss in the television footage. It looked that way, certainly. You even say that in some ways, Iraqis' joy seemed more palpable than after Saddam Hussein's fall. How do you measure that, and why?
When we look back at the war, the fall of Saddam was followed by a lot of anxiety, a lot of unease. There was looting was unleashed. Parts of the city fell into anarchy and chaos. And I think there was also a certain sentiment that some people expressed that they wish they had done it themselves. They wish they themselves could have overthrown Saddam Hussein. What you saw yesterday in the election was in fact, people trying to take the future into their own hands, trying to decide their destiny. They themselves were the agents of change. And I think a lot of people saw the election that way. They weren't necessarily voting for a party or a platform, but they were voting to just be voting simply. This is the first time since, under Saddam's rule and the U.S. occupation, that they were consulted, that they got to say how they wanted their future to turn out. And I think that they were acting rather than foreigners or an occupation force or another military. I think that they themselves were acting. It seemed to be a powerful current yesterday in conversations.
Anthony, it is for anyone, especially for Americans, and certainly this time for Iraqis, it's a powerful thing to see the images of people turning out to vote, especially when there are such dire threats to life and limb there. Are Iraqis taking away a real optimism from this day? Is it a moment in the sun, or do they feel they've turned a corner? You've noted that they've been optimistic before in this process and disappointed. How deep is the optimism that accompanies these images, this day of voting?
Well, it's a good question. I think there are a lot of levels to it. You know, we have to remember that in certain Sunni areas in northern and central Iraq, there was not great turnout there. At one polling station in Ramadi, six people turned out, and five of those people were government officials. In a town called Bulu'iya, the polling stations didn't even open. So it wasn't an all-inclusive vote necessarily, and it is going to be difficult for officials to claim that the returns themselves are representative of the country at large. But in Baghdad, and in some Sunni areas that we didn't expect to see turnout, we did, in fact, see that. And there was a lot of optimism that followed. Like you pointed out, we have seen these moments of optimism in the past. After the fall of Saddam, when the governing council was named in 2003, when the interim government was named in 2004, each of these moments was followed by a lot of hope, and disappointment soon followed weeks later. The government that comes is going to face that same challenge to somehow deliver an improvement in lives that will gain popular support, will gain the credibility it needs to negotiate some of these challenges. That would be a tough task for any government anywhere. But it's in Iraq makes it even more difficult. This country still remains deeply divided in a lot of ways, and it's a very weary landscape out there. You know, most people feel in material terms that lives have not necessarily gotten better. To bring about an improvement in that is probably going to be the most immediate need for that government to do.
When you asked Iraqi voters what they want from this newly elected government, what did they tell you?
Security is first and foremost. There's security kind of has an absolute quality to it. Either you feel safe or you don't, and a lot of people don't feel safe in Baghdad. And even in parts of Iraq where the insurgency isn't that strong, in Basra, for instance, it's often a complaint that crime is rampant, that people don't feel safe at night outside of their homes. So security is definitely going to be the first challenge of any government. But I think more broadly, it's an improvement in material conditions. I mean, you're looking at a country that has the second largest oil reserves in the world, and it's very common to see lines for gasoline stretching, miles on any day. Electricity is still rare. Blackouts stretch for hours and hours each day. Prices are going up a little bit, and people are complaining that their food rations haven't been complete. So, somehow to bring about a tangible improvement, I think, is going to be what that government is going to put a priority on. From the political angle, though, this government's also going to face the challenge of somehow including the disillusioned or disenchanted Sunni Arab minority. That itself is also going to be a challenge, how they go about doing that and how they include leaders among the Sunni minority that have credibility within the Sunni community.
Anthony, you quote the interim Prime Minister Iyad Alawi saying today in a very jubilant mood, but saying, the terrorists now know they cannot win. Do you think that the terrorists, the insurgents in Iraq, see things that way?
Well, the insurgency is a disparate group of, is a disparate collection of many groups. Some of them are, basically nationalists. Some of them are religious militants. Some of them are foreigners. It's tough to say how they're going to feel across the board, but, very, very few people in Baghdad right now are predicting that the insurgency will somehow wane. In fact, U.S. officials even suggested it might increase in the coming weeks and months as the insurgents or parts of the insurgency try to prove that there's still a presence in this country. What we saw in Baghdad was, to be honest, a breathtaking display of security. The city was closed down. There was no traffic. In some ways, it felt safer than it has at any time since Saddam's collapse in April 2003. They can't continue that kind of security. You can't ban traffic from the streets day after day. I don't think there's any question that you are going to see attacks continue, that the violence will continue at some level. Insurgents may, in fact, try to prove that they're still a crisis. They may even try to escalate their attacks to show that they weren't defeated, as Alawi put it. What they can do is another question. I mean, most of the campaign has been a campaign of intimidation in Sunni regions. It's been more and more difficult to hit government targets, to hit U.S. troops, and they've relied on softer targets in the past. Whether they change their tactics in the future is a good question, but I don't think you're going to necessarily see a diminishing or see a slackening and the insurgents' resolve to carry out their campaign.
But certainly, at least for now, a heartened Iraqi populace, at least that part that's bought into the election. And what we feel is a determination to go forward.
I think there is a determination to go forward. I think there is going to be a brief window here as Iraqis wait to see what the consequence of their election or what the consequence of their vote. They definitely made their sentiments heard clear yesterday, especially in Baghdad and southern Iraq and northern Iraq. They want to see security. They want to see an improvement in lives, and they also want to exercise rights, I believe, of theirs now. The next step is obviously up to the government that's named in the coming weeks and whether it can meet some of those expectations.
Anthony Shadid, thanks for your coverage, and thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Anthony Shadid is Islamic Affairs correspondent for The Washington Post. He spoke with me from Baghdad. We want to hear tonight direct from Iraqis in Iraq about their assessment of voting day and its implications. This afternoon, we recorded conversations with four Iraqis, a Shiite, a Sunni, a Christian, and a Kurd. We go first tonight to Iraq's great southern city, Basra. That's the hometown of Anwar al-Jabour, an Iraqi woman who voted there in yesterday's election. Anwar also directed local coverage of the elections for Radio Al-Marain, a news station which receives some government support. She and her reporters had to make it through 10 checkpoints on the way to their station the night before the election, fearing at each one, she tells us, that they might be killed by nervous guards. They slept overnight at the radio station to be ready to cover yesterday's vote. The first thing they had to do was to reassure folks in Basra that their drinking supply had not been poisoned. Police had gone through the streets with megaphones the night before, saying that they feared that there had been poison dropped in the public drinking supply. It wasn't so. The elections went forward. Anwar al-Jabour joined me from Basra. Anwar al-Jabour, I wish you'd tell us about your own personal voting experience yesterday. We want to hear about your news collection as well, but first of all, simply, where did you vote? How did it go? How did it feel?
Well, I vote in Basra in a polling center near my house. It was very wonderful. When I went to the polling center, I went there with my family. The place was very well secured. When we arrived to the polling center, there were two searching points. And when we went in there, there was searching for the men and searching for the ladies.
Searching for weapons.
We took our bags, searching for weapons. They didn't allow us to have any mobiles, only our IDs and papers for the polling. And we went in. Nobody influenced us. We went into the center. There were guides who tell us where to go. And we went there. We sign our name. And then we go and we take the papers. And we went into a place and we marked the party that we select. Of course, every person in my family has his own opinion, so nobody affected the other opinion. Everybody put whatever he wants, and we put all our papers inside the polling box, and it was very wonderful. Then we stick our finger in the ink. The purpose from that is that the person who made the polling for the first time, he doesn't go back and make another turn.
Anwar Al-Jabbour, you say it felt wonderful to be voting, and we can imagine that, but I wish you'd elaborate on that. As you voted, as you watched Iraqis voting around you there in Basra, when you look back on what happened yesterday, what are your thoughts about the significance of this day, this vote?
Being a radio station, we started to receive calls from Basra and from all over Iraq. One of the ladies, her name is Intisar, called us and she said it is just like a newborn of Iraq, which is the expression that we all feel. She said that her mother was very sick and her pressure was very high, but she said, I must go and I must participate. And she went there and she participated. Another person, his father was very sick. He called the police, and the police bring a car, and they took him, ambulance car, they took him with ambulance car to the center, and he started voting. I myself, when I went there, there was an old lady. She was walking very hardly. She was using some kind of wheel to move. We helped her to go in, and she go through the search. And then she go into the center, and it was a very wonderful. Some people started to sing songs, and from the early morning, in some parts of Basra, in some parts of Iraq, there were hundreds of people. My sister, when she went into her station, she's in different location. When she went into the polling center, she found 200 ladies there with her. The main thought that came to her mind, oh my God, if something happened, if somebody carries a bomb, what will happen to us? But thank God everything passed very wonderfully. The security situation was very good there.
Anwar, have you ever voted before in your life, or is this the first time?
Before, we went to a center that we have to say either yes or no, yes. To choose Saddam or no, we don't want Saddam. And most of us have to say yes, because if we write no, they will cut the ration card, our ration card. Mm-hmm. So most of the people said yes.
So not the first time you voted, but the first time that felt like you had a free choice.
The first time that we had a free choice, yes. The last time it was not a voting, it was yes or no. I can't consider it voting.
Anwar Al-Jabbour in Basra, we've got to take a short break here. Please stand by. We're talking tonight with Iraqis about the vote in Iraq. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with Iraqis about yesterday's vote in Iraq. You've seen the images. You've heard the sounds. Now get it firsthand from people who were there in the balloting places. My guest right now is speaking with us from Basra in southern Iraq, Anwar Al-Jabbour. She's director of Radio Al-Narain. She's lived in Basra her entire life, except for 5 years. She spent studying in Baghdad. I have to ask you, Anwar Al-Jabbour, you are Shia. And there's been a lot of conversation about the split between Shia and Sunni in Iraq, a lot of conversation about Sunni boycotting this election, and threats from insurgents threatening to kill anyone who participated. How do you feel about this divide now? Shia have turned out very heavily. We don't know yet about the Sunni turnout. Does Iraq have a deep, insurmountable problem here? Will this election help to bridge it?
Well, this matter of Sunni and Shia might be a concern for the whole world, but here it doesn't, because here Sunni have participated in the election as well as Shia. In Al-Zubayr, for instance, Sunni and Shia went to participate in the election. I have interviewed and seen many ladies that are Sunni, and they said, we are going to participate, and they did. When we go to the polling center, we did not feel that there is Sunni, Shia, Christian, or any other groups. We feel like we are Iraqis and we went to the polling center.
But you know that you live in a part of Iraq that is heavily Shia. In some of the areas that are most heavily Sunni, the turnout was very low, it appears.
Well, you can't say. In Mosul, for instance, there are many Sunnis, and they appear to the polling centers.
Yeah.
There are only the people who does not want to participate. For instance, the people in Fallujah. There were no polling center in Fallujah because they did not live there. But in Baghdad, they go and they participate in the election.
Let me ask you, looking forward from today, the election's behind you there now. We can feel a great sense of accomplishment among Iraqis. Yet, you know how many difficulties there have been in the last 2 or 3 years. What's your level of optimism, of hope or fear looking forward, looking ahead?
I'm looking forward to a new Iraq, to a new democracy where everybody can participate in writing their constitution. Because of the partial representative here, and the parliament, everybody will have a seat there. It's only according to the number of voters that have voted for this party or that group or that group.
And Anwar, let me ask you, if I may, what's your message tonight to Iraqis who chose not to vote, who boycotted this election? What do you say to them?
Well, those who chose not to vote, they just have harmed themselves. They did not choose in the national parliament. They did not choose somebody. Well, I wish that we don't face problems from that, because the main concern and the main difficulties that might face us in the future is that if there is a constitution to be written in the future, it should be approved by 50% plus one from the population of Iraq. But now, since the people of Fallujah have participated, Mosul have participated, it's only the people of Ramadi, which they are the Saddam's old Ba'ath group, and they are Sunni at the same time. It's only their problem. So let's hope that the national parliament, the future, will not face this problem.
Well, a feeling of real satisfaction in yesterday's turnout, and still some potential major obstacles ahead. But we hear that satisfaction, Anwar Al-Jabbour, and we thank you for sharing your thoughts with us tonight. Thank you so much for joining us from Basra.
Thank you very much.
Anwar Al-Jabbour is director of the news station Radio Al-Narain. She spoke with me from Basra in southern Iraq. We're talking tonight with Iraqis about their big election day and the country's way forward now. Despite death threats, there were long lines at many polling stations yesterday. Many Iraqis were in a clearly celebratory mood. Dr. Wamid Nadmi is one of those who was not, in fact, who did not vote. He's a professor of political science at Baghdad University and is spokesman for the Iraqi Foundation Congress, a party that called for a boycott of yesterday's voting. Dr. Wamid Nadmi, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Dr. Nadmi, your party boycotted yesterday's elections. The American television screens are full of images of Iraqis turning out in long lines to vote and celebrating the election. Are you feeling that you made the right decision not to be part of this process?
Yes, we still feel that we made the right decision, because since the American occupation of Iraq, we thought that only through election, on the condition that it should be fair and objective, that we could rebuild Iraq again. And we called for this point of view much earlier than when the American administration and the Iraqi administration responded to it. When the elections became near, we issued a statement in which we sent a copy to Mr. Kofi Annan, in which we requested certain requirements to ensure that the elections would be objective and would represent the opinion of the Iraqis. And one of them was to have an international committee for supervising the elections and deciding on its legitimacy. And we suggested someone who is like President Jimmy Carter, who was part of the American establishment, but who enjoys good reputation in Iraq because of his objectivity and honesty.
Dr. Nadmi, are you suggesting, Dr. Nadmi, that yesterday's voting was not fair?
No, I'm not suggesting that, but I advise you to be careful about what is this committee who was appointed by Mr. Bremer is saying. Last night they said it was 72 who participated in the election, 72% of 100, and today they said it was only 60. Perhaps by tomorrow we'll hear it was only 50. So apart from that, we did not say that anyone who is vote is a traitor, is an enemy of the people. We said everyone who believes in voting, let him vote, and we will respect his opinion on the condition that they would respect our opinion. And we request a meeting, a national meeting, to discuss the coming elections. However, a lot of people did vote. I don't know whether they were 60%, 50%, 40%. Even if they were 30%, they are an important section of the Iraqi society, and we have to come to terms with them through certain compromises.
Your party, the Iraqi Foundation Congress, has Shia members, Sunnis, Christians. You have a Shia cleric at the head of the party. Do you feel that that your party, your members, will be disadvantaged because of your boycott of yesterday's vote?
No, because we thought that the election, we still think, was not run in an objective and fair way. I can't understand why the American administration would send Mr. Jimmy Carter to Venezuela and then decline to send the same person to an Iraq who is occupied by American troops, and you cannot say that it is totally objective.
But you were saying before that you thought it was fair. Is your general sense of yesterday's voting that it's generally fair or unfair?
No, it wasn't fair. There was bombs. There were police wearing things on their faces, so no one could recognize them. Is this sign of a safe government? There was no voting in Anbar. There was no voting in Fallujah. There was no voting, or very, very few people voted in several areas. If you are saying that 60% voted, well, I will tell you that 40% did not vote. And since I appreciate the voting of those who voted, I would like my attitude to be appreciated. We are not asking for a victory. We are asking for an objective conditions which might convince everyone in Iraq that this election is properly conducted.
With insurgents in Iraq calling for a boycott and threatening to cut off the head of anyone who didn't vote, do you think that Iraq could have had a better turnout if they had waited?
No, I think if we had reached an agreement on the conditions of the elections, the terrorists would have a very declined influence, because most people would like to have an elections and a democratically elected government. But after all, I would like to ask you, you always talk about terrorists, and I condemn their threats for people who are voting. But what about the torture in Abu Ghraib prison?
Mm-hmm.
What about the attack on Fallujah? Fallujah did not attack the United States of America. Fallujah did not attack the American army. It was the American army on the 8th of November who attacked Fallujah and destroyed the whole town composed of 350,000 people. There were no terrorists before the American occupation in Iraq. Could you explain to me from where did this terrorist groups came?
I understand the frustration you're expressing there, and I see what you're referring to. I wonder what you think on this side of the election. Are Iraq's prospects for a stable, secure future better with this election behind it, or not?
Well, this election is not as important as the American administration tried to tell the mass media all over the world and the Iraqi people. We have another elections by the end of this year. What we are asking is that Iraqis, whether they are pro-occupation and whether they were anti-occupation, to come together and decide collectively what is the best way to have a free election. And from now, I tell you in all honesty that we will recognize the results of the elections if it was conducted freely. By advance, we will recognize our defeat if we were defeated. We will recognize our victory if we were victorious in these elections. What we are suggesting is a fair election, election which satisfied an overwhelming majority of the Iraqis, not 50% and dissatisfied other 50%.
So still waiting for that satisfactory election at the University of Baghdad. Professor Wahid Nadmi, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
Wahid Nadmi is a professor of political science at Baghdad University and spokesman for the Iraqi Foundation Congress, a group that boycotted yesterday's election. He spoke with me from Baghdad. Some of the millions of Iraqis who did go to vote yesterday made the event a family affair. Sana Tariq, director of the Independent Iraqi Women's Organization, is one of those. The 45-year-old Christian dentist said she and her family were determined to vote, though they were all supporting different candidates. She spoke with me from Baghdad with the help of Boston-based translator Wafa Al-Natima, founder of the Institute of Middle Eastern and African Studies. Sana Tariq, welcome.
Thank you.
Let me ask Sana Tariq, how was it to go voting? What was your experience of going to the polls?
Everything went fine, very easily. It was a very joyous event. So many people came despite the bombs in the morning. We are on Palestine Street, which was relatively quiet, and we went to the poll and voted.
Let me ask Sana Tariq, why did you vote in spite of the death threats? What was it that took you and your family to the polls?
First, we want to prove that the troublemakers or the terrorists will not interfere with our intention or desire to vote, and second, to simply accomplish a democratic poll that involves many ethnic and religious backgrounds.
Sana Tariq, you're a Christian. The whole world is paying attention to the Sunni and Shia and how they get along after this vote. Some Sunni have boycotted the vote. Do you think that the election will lead to more problems or to a solution to this, the issue of how the Sunni will live in a majority Shia time?
Actually, there were Sunnis in the polls, and there were very many. In fact, the president, Yawar, and the Pachachi, and his affiliates, many families went to the poll and voted, many Sunni families. Those who are against it and have boycotted the elections were mostly followers of the previous regimes, the Baathists. In fact, some few Baathists even showed up and voted.
Are you confident that on the other side of this election, Iraq will see more peace and more stability, or is there still great conflict ahead?
إن شاء الله يصير سلام. أكيد هو راح يصير بالبداية مشاكل.
Of course, at the beginning there will be many problems, but eventually this will be resolved simply because there was elections, and then it represented several or various ethnic and religious groups, and eventually it will be towards a better situation.
Sonny Tariq, many Americans are uncertain about whether the U.S. military should continue to be in Iraq. Today, on this side of the elections, what's your message to Americans about having the U.S. military in Iraq, about keeping it in Iraq? Should it be there? Should it stay there?
In the near future, it is recommended that the U.S. Stays until Iraq is able to resolve some of these problems and be independent and able to rule itself.
So for now, she wants to see it there. That sounds like a conditional yes, stay for a while. And what about women? One-third of all the candidates on the lists being voted on yesterday were women. Will this election be helpful to the position of women in Iraqi society?
The fact that they are third in the list of poll definitely will help tremendously to bring women more fair representation. And also knowing that women count for 60% of the society.
And finally, Sonny Tariq, I wonder if you can just tell us how you feel in your heart the day after this election. Do you feel Iraq has had such a rough time in recent years, for a long time now? As we speak tonight, do you feel more hope or more fear for the future?
After yesterday's election, I'm more hopeful of the situation after seeing so many people coming to the poll and wanting a better Iraq and a peaceful Iraq.
Your group, the Independent Iraq Women's Organization, was working to get women to go to the polls. In most families, who do you think was most insistent that people vote, the mother or the father, the woman or the man?
Actually, women were more determined and eager than men in this election.
Sana Tariq, thank you so much for being with us from Baghdad.
Thank you.
Sana Tariq is a Baghdad dentist. She's also director of the Independent Iraqi Women's Organization. She spoke with me through a translator, Boston-based Wafaa Al-Nathima. We're talking tonight with Iraqis about yesterday's vote in Iraq. Let's go into the break with some sounds of post-election celebration yesterday in Iraq. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Very, very happy today. Very, very happy.
Like America, be democracy, be freedom for people to talk, to go on the street to say what they need to the government, because never they allowed us to do that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight with Iraqis about yesterday's big vote in Iraq. Northern Iraq is reported to have had one of the strongest turnouts in yesterday's elections. Many ethnic Kurds who live in the north came out to support Kurdish parties in the national vote. Fala Mustafa is Minister of State in the Kurdistan Regional Government, a top-ranking official there. He spoke with me from his home in Erbil. Fala Mustafa, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
So tell us about voting in Erbil yesterday. Was it peaceful? Was there a big turnout?
Yes, indeed. Yesterday was a great day in our history, in the history of the Kurdish people and also the entire peoples of Iraq. It was peaceful. There was a large turnout from the people because they saw that as an opportunity in this historical day and at this moment to come and to cast their votes in order to decide their own future.
Why do you say it was such a great day for both the Kurdish people and for the whole country of Iraq?
Because people who have lived under the tyranny and dictatorship for over 35 years, they appreciate a day like yesterday. In 1992, the Kurdish people and the people of Kurdistan had an opportunity to have general elections in this region. But for the people of Iraq, it is for the first time in their history to come to polling stations freely and without any force on them and to be able to vote for the people that they want to vote and not to have somebody already decided who would be the president of Iraq.
Fala Mustafa, when Kurds showed up yesterday to vote in apparently quite large numbers and cast their votes, we're assuming, generally, for Kurdish lists of candidates for the Interim National Assembly, were they voting for the Iraqi country or were they voting for Kurdish autonomy, even Kurdish independence?
No, indeed, yesterday we had cases of polling stations, but outside the polling stations, there were some tents put by the referendum movement. At the polling stations, people were casting their vote for three layers of election. One was for the Iraqi National Assembly, the second was for Kurdistan National Assembly, and the third was for the provincial councils. So the people who went to the polling stations, they were casting their votes for these three. But on the exit side of the polling stations, there were tents that was prepared by the referendum movement, asking the people whether they want to have an independent state or do they want to be part of Iraq.
And do you know how the referendum went? Are Kurds voting with an eye towards staying in Iraq or with an eye toward getting out of Iraq?
Well, to be honest with you, this afternoon I had an opportunity to meet with some of the people who were at the referendum movement, and they were saying that 90% of the people who went to the polling stations went to the tent voluntarily, and out of that number, 90% have voted to have an independent state.
So what does this foretell for the future of Iraq if Kurds overwhelmingly want an independent state? Does this mean civil war? Does it mean the breakup of the country or not?
Not indeed. Why a civil war? The Kurdish nation or the Kurdish people, like any other people throughout the world, they deserve to have an independent state of their own. But the issue of when and how and what time, that's the question. Otherwise, every single Kurd in the deep down in their heart, they believe in that right to have an independent state of their own. But we have to be realistic and we have to know what time that's possible, because sometimes there are factors that work against you and other times that the environment, the situation will be conducive. That goal would be achieved through peaceful ways.
In a democratic government, the Sunnis will lose power. Their portion of the population is simply not as large as the Shia or even the Kurds. How do you think they'll ultimately accommodate that loss of power?
You know, there is a question. Iraq is made up on the basis of two main nationalities, Kurds and Arabs, and other ethnic groups and other ethnic nationalities living in Iraq. Hmm. But of course, the three main pillars of the Iraqi society are the Kurds, the Shia Arabs, and the Sunni Arabs. But it's not the case that one party can impose its own will against the others. And it's not a matter of majority versus minority or minority versus majority. In a federal democratic government, everybody would enjoy their rights. And of course, you will have a federal government in the center that would protect the rights of the people and that would represent that government. And because of the complexities of the situation of Iraq, and because of, for example, the Sunni case, they have lost the power. The Shias, they want to gain power. The Kurds, they want to enjoy their full rights within Iraq. So that would mean that there should be a kind of compromise and consensus. The new Iraq should have a kind of constitution, as it has been stipulated in TAL and also in the UN Resolution 1546, that the permanent constitution for Iraq should be based on consensus, that the rights, the aspirations of the people should be reflected in that constitution.
Fala Mustafa, a final thought. Your level of optimism, of hope or fear looking forward after yesterday's vote?
We are optimistic about the future, but we have to be cautious. It needs a lot of work. Many of the problems of the past could be addressed if the issues are put on the table and addressed and tackled properly. So therefore, if you want to rebuild the country, you have to have the right approach. You have to have cooperation, understanding, and also a roadmap, a plan of action in order to be able to make your steps. But you cannot continue making mistakes and be optimistic.
So fewer mistakes and let's look for a positive way forward. Fala Mustafa, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Fala Mustafa is Minister of State in the Kurdistan Regional Government. He spoke with me from Erbil in northern Iraq. Sunday's apparently healthy election turnout in Iraq produced immediate criticism in the U.S. of opponents of the American involvement there, with administration officials quickly going on air to announce their satisfaction with the vote. Michael Ignatieff is director of the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government. His Sunday essay in the New York Times magazine argues that support for the U.S. effort in Iraq has become a victim of what he calls the corrosive bitterness about the initial decision to go to war. Michael Ignatieff, thanks for joining us.
Hi, nice to be here.
So you're writing, Michael, that the corrosive bitterness about the initial decision to go to war has led to a falling off of support that you feel should have been there all along for the democratization effort.
Yeah, I was shocked by the kind of sullen silence with which people in Europe, people in the United States, watch this appalling spectacle of people being, you know, poll workers getting killed, polling stations getting rocketed. This is before the election. Candidates being driven into hiding, candidates who dare to campaign having to wear bulletproof vests. I mean, this is a pretty obvious example to me of someone using violence to destroy a democratic election. And I just thought, whatever you thought about the rightness or wrongness of the war, this attempt to frustrate Iraqi democracy was just wrong, and we should have been shouting and screaming about it. And the result yesterday shows that, in fact, you know, the Iraqis passionately wanted a free vote. And I just felt that we're still so bitter, still so unhappy about the war, that we can't even admit that whether it was right or wrong to go into the thing, there was an election, and we needed to support it more fully than we did.
You write, liberals can't bring themselves to support freedom in Iraq lest they seem to collude with neoconservative bombast.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the difficulty we've got here is that we've got a president who's turned democracy and freedom into a kind of, you know, into a kind of slogan, and he's linked it to a lot of, you know, what I called providentialism. I mean, the idea that God himself is, you know, driving the great chariot of history towards freedom and democracy. Well, a lot of liberals listen to the rhetoric of that inaugural and think, boy, if that's what supporting democracy means, I don't want to have anything to do with it. So that was a problem. And then there was the problem that many liberals just didn't want to support the war in any case. But the casualty of this position was that we weren't prepared to support Iraqi democracy, which it seems to me is a very, very good thing indeed. In fact, the only good thing to come out of this infernal experience.
You say we weren't prepared to support it. On the other hand, there were 150,000 American troops there and, what, $5 billion a month being poured into the effort. So it's not exactly parsimonious support.
No, it's true. But it seems to me there is a very, very substantial proportion of the American liberal public, represented by the man I very much admire, Senator Kennedy from my own state of Massachusetts, who basically wants to pull Americans out of there now. What I worry is that the sense that it has just been too costly, too difficult for America may lead us to give up too early on the possibilities of Iraqi democracy. And I think that Sunday's vote shows that, you know, if we could just hang in there and keep our nerve into early 2006, it might be possible then to draw down our forces and reduce our commitment, because they've got to stand on their feet. It's their country. They've got to do it. But it would be a big mistake to draw down too fast in 2005. These people need our support to keep those polling places safe, to keep the constitutional process safe, to keep it from being blown up. And that really is worth doing, it seems to me.
Michael Ignatieff, there have been luminous moments of promise and hope before. The quick initial fall of Saddam Hussein's government, the mission accomplished moment, the capture of Saddam Hussein. Are you confident that Iraq has, with yesterday's vote, turned a significant corner, or might we still be headed into that kind of what so many people have feared, that violent quagmire?
I think that's a very good question, and it's honestly put. We've had a lot of false dawns, and this could be a false dawn. But I do think that it's different than the other ones, because this election creates a constituent assembly. The assembly is now charged to write a constitution. The constitution then is ratified. Then there are, you know, elections to elect another government that will run the country permanently. In other words, this moment on Sunday initiates a democratic process that now flows right through for another year. I think the success of this moment on Sunday means that the other moments will be successful, provided that there's a sufficient American security for the process and provided that the Iraqi Defense Force is stood up. That's why I think it's more than a false dawn. I think it started a process that, if we sustain, will mean that whatever we think about the war, we will be able to say at the end of it, we did help to stand up a really indigenous, homegrown Iraqi democracy, and that will be worth something. I'm not going to tell your listeners that it'll be worth 1,400 American dead. I'm not going to tell you it's worth $300 billion. I don't know what it's really worth. I just know that it matters intensely to those 26 million people. And all I know about the whole experience is that I think we'd feel an awful lot worse about it if we got nothing but chaos, civil war, and horror. And I think it's better to get a democratic outcome.
Amen to that. What's your message to those Americans and maybe others who will have seen the images of Iraqis risking their lives to vote yesterday and will have been moved by those images and by the thought of that readiness to risk life, and yet at the same time do not want to, in your words, collude with neoconservative bombasts? How do you thread that narrow way?
It's very tough. I mean, I think that the right thing for liberals, and I think of myself as a liberal, to do is to try and support Iraqi democracy without succumbing to a lot of providential rhetoric about God's eternal design, and holding this administration, the Bush administration, to its promises. The thing that is disturbing about this administration is not just the rhetoric, but the gap between the rhetoric and what they're actually prepared to put in and provide. And we got to watch to make sure they don't draw down the forces so fast that Iraqi democracy is exposed. We've got to hold them to the promise to stand up and put money in the training of an Iraqi security force. We've got to hold them to the promise of really committing to this constitutional process. We've got to hold them to the promise that they're not going to screw around with the results. That is to say, if the Iraqis elect a government that wants us out of there, then we got to listen to the government that says they want us out of here.
And yet that's powerful imagery yesterday. Does yesterday's vote, the turnout there, redeem the Bush administration from all the missteps along the way, as characterized by liberals and conservatives?
It will try to do that, because this is politics. Any self-respecting politician would want to claim all the credit he could from Sunday. But the reality is the credit belongs to ordinary, courageous Iraqi men and women, not to the Bush administration by and large. It also belongs, let me make it perfectly clear, to the incredibly brave and courageous American serving men and women who stood post to make democracy possible. I mean, that's what you ought to use military force to do, to help people to create a free society. So tremendous credit to the troops, tremendous credit to ordinary Iraqis, but real questions for this administration, because, you know, it's taken much too long to get to this vote. The security situation has got almost completely out of control before the Americans clawed it back. These are failures that can be laid directly at the Bush administration. This vote doesn't erase the failures that have come in a cascade since 2003.
And no doubt there's much more reality to come down the pike, and not every day will be quite so uplifting as yesterday. Michael Ignatieff, thanks so much for being with us.
Pleasure.
Michael Ignatieff is director of the Carr Center for Human Rights Policy at Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. He spoke with me from Cambridge. Thanks to all those Iraqis who spoke with us tonight, from Basra, from Baghdad, from Erbil. Thanks to you for listening. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.